Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
He covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Flair, over there in the middle on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, where I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirchhoff of the Kansas City Star on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now with our friend Robert, with our friend Blair Kirchhoff, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Right now, the 2020 Buick Enclave, you can save over $10,000 off MSRP with no payments for 120 days or get 0% for 84 months. You can find yours, your Buick Enclave, online at robertbrogdon.com. Buick Encores offers low as $16,999 with no payments for 120 days or 84 months, 0% financing. You cannot beat the deals at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC there at I-35 and Santa Fe. You can GPS them if you're coming from just outside the city. 1500 East Santa Fe Street in Olathe. Voted the number one car dealer to do business with time and time again. Also, the number one Buick dealer in the country, number one volume GM dealer in Kansas City. It's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. And, of course, if your truck is your office, the GMC Sierra pickup truck is your next office, your next truck. Save up to $15,000 off MSRP. No payments for 120 days. That's 4 months, people. Or 0% for 84 months. Clickety click 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 at robertbrogdon.com. You can find yours right there. Largest Sierra and Yukon inventory anywhere around is at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 and Santa Fe. They will even deliver the vehicle right to you. Go to robertbrogdon.com. Mr. Kirchhoff, sir, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. I hope you are, too.
No complaints. You know, raining a lot of flooding going on. I hope people are being careful out there.
A lot.
You see the pictures of Westport?
Yes. Westport is underwater, and you can swim through Westport right now. And just driving over here, passing a couple of the creeks on the way to the station, it is creeks are overflowing.
Yeah,
with rainwater. Yeah, it is. It's tough out there. I mean, it was just today's rain, right? We didn't get any rain before today. This was just based on today's rain.
A little bit a couple days ago or the day before.
Just
some sprinkle type stuff. You know, not the kind of thing that you think would just inundate everything. But man, when it came down today, it came down and came down for a long time.
You know, the flood, the 77 flood, which everyone who's around here remember, it had rained for like 3 or 4 days straight when that thing hit. I mean, there was a reason for that. This is all mostly one system.
I always tell people that when people who don't know Kansas City, usually people in my family who don't know Kansas City, and you know, I tell them it doesn't rain here; it floods. You know, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't. We don't have winter; we have a blizzard. You know, we have weather in the extreme in Kansas City.
We do. I will tell you one of the things that when I lived in Las Vegas, like every time it rained, it was like a downpour. You don't get a gentle sprinkle; you get like a monsoon, and they have what they call the monsoon season there in Vegas. And then it does not, you know, soak in anywhere. So every time it rains,
it's right on
it's
top.
Like, yeah, it's flood season. Like, here it comes. It's going to be roaring down these rocky, you know, everything's around there, and here it comes. So, yeah, that was, you know, it rains so much, it saturates and then starts backing up. There, it's like, okay, here it is. It's going to be a 10-minute downpour, and we're going to have 3 feet of water in certain areas. All right, Blair, a couple things I want to get to. I want to get to some of the comments from the All-American Conference athletic director here in a minute. But first, your thoughts on the subject of voluntary workouts. We mentioned this before. Our new intern, Dorian, is here, and she played lacrosse at Connecticut. And I asked her, I want you to hear this. For, you know, this is not obviously Alabama football where you're like, oh, there's all this revenue. Not that that should determine whether or not somebody, you know, should determine the definition of the word voluntary. But, Dorian, what did a voluntary workout for Connecticut lacrosse mean for you?
We used to call them optional workouts, the mandatory optional. So
how great is that?
It was right. It was one of those things where we'd be like, coach, so it's optional? Yes. While she's shaking her head, yes, but it's voluntary. It's optional. And every single day that there was a optional workout, the entire team was there. We had 100% attendance.
So if that's what it is, you know, in one of the non-revenue sports, you know, like, and I'm going to ask Jim Sterk about this. He's going to be on with us next hour, the athletic director at Missouri, about, you know, how about the optional workout thing? Like, how optional are these when they say that the campuses are now open for optional workouts? I mean, that really is like, if you were still playing, Dorian, and they said the campus is now open for optional workouts, you would feel like you need to get there if you're going to keep your scholarship, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that in this, you know, in the current conditions, that idea has changed a little bit and softened, because, you know, way back in the day, they were called captain's practices, right? And, you know, the team captain would be the one who communicated this is when the optional workout or optional practice is going to be. And, you know, and he'd tell you it's optional with a wink, you know, it's optional, wink, wink. And you were there. You just were there. But we're in different times with different circumstances. And I would be interested to hear what Jim Sterk has to say when you ask him that, because, you know, there are genuine fears out there for, you know, for the health and welfare of are we to take the words of athletic, you know, of university presidents and chancellors and athletic officials, athletic directors, and even coaches who say the health of these student athletes is paramount. You know, that is number one in our, you know, in our feelings. Read what Joe Castiglione, you know, wrote the other day, or was quoted as saying. I don't know if it was in a statement or if he said it to somebody, but, you know, Joe Castiglione, who we respect greatly, you know, the athletic director at Oklahoma, you know, went on and on about protecting the health of the student athlete. And that's why Oklahoma football is starting later than everybody else, right? Big 12 football camps can open on June 15th, and Oklahoma's decided to start on July 1st. So, I hope that optional, you know, in quotation marks, just means something in 2020 than it did in previous times.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I think it's probably going to depend on, is Lincoln Riley your coach or is Mike Gundy your coach?
Right.
Right.
Or like, 90 miles away, right? You know.
Yeah, I don't think they're very optional for Mike Gundy's squad, but I think Lincoln Riley, you'd have a more compassionate ear to, if you're like, hey, here's why. You know, Patrick Beverley, you know, is saying that he doesn't want to report to the Clippers camp. You know, I mean, and that's a guy who's got money on the line. I mean, I do think there is a big line in between, you know, professional sports and college sports on this front.
Yeah, well, in the idea of, you know, being able to, I've heard some baseball players as well say this, and now we're hearing from MLS players saying they don't want to spend as much time in Orlando as originally suggested, that let's cut down on whatever it was originally, 2 months or something. Let's not make it as long. But you know, for one thing that we have discussed all along is liability, and, you know, who's protecting the student athletes? You know, what recourse would they have if they, you know, caught the virus in a, you know, if it swept through a locker room or a clubhouse or whatever, and you know, and were, you know, made really ill by it, who, you know, who's liable for that? Who's protecting the student athlete in that sense? So these are, I don't think that the Big 12 or the Pac-12, which also set the June 15th date, I think the SEC is June 8th, but the major colleges all basically have established a, you know, weekend, a Saturday or whatever that day is in June, to open to allow their programs to open, and I imagine they would have thought about this. And that's the next big question is when we get to those dates and Kansas and Kansas State and Missouri and the local schools are open for business in college for football practice, you know, what's the percentage of players that are there and show up, and what protections do they have? What not just the medical protections, but the legal protections that they have as well.
Here in DeMaurice Smith, yesterday, say he put, or maybe it was 2 days ago, and we played it yesterday. Whenever he said it, you know, asked on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most likely that we have an NFL season. Where did he put it? He put it a 6 or 7.
That's lower than I would have answered.
Right, and that's with, you know, a union that will have signed off and said we're coming, and there will be no liability. How is the liability different on the college level?
Well, I mean, it's different because these are amateurs versus professionals, and
right.
protected by, you know, professionals protected by a union, and college players will, you know, there's a certain awareness, a growing awareness in among the college athlete ranks that a union would be in their best interest. And you know, that's a movement that's grown over the last few years, but it's not there yet. It's not there now when they might need it the most. So, we're sort of torn between, you know, wanting to see this happen. And I haven't, the stories that I've read about reopening college football have mostly been even by the people that have been most cautious. And that includes Lincoln Riley. And it also includes Bob Bowlesby. He's been, you know, he's been really, I think, honest and forthright about reopening college sports. But even they're saying, you know, it's kind of time to do it. And they don't disagree with the idea of it happening. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen. But look, I'm like you. I think about what worst case scenarios could be. What if players, you know, contract, you know, the coronavirus and it spreads through a locker room, and team has a game that weekend. Does the team forfeit that game? I mean, there's all kinds of unknowns and unanswerable questions right now when it comes to this. We're just going to have to do we wait until there's a vaccine? Do we wait until everybody can be, you know, inoculated against this? All the schools are promising testing in a large way, but I don't know. I don't know. There's still so much unknown about this.
All right, let's hear Commissioner Mike Oresko. He's the commissioner AAC, the American Athletic Conference.
I believe UConn is in that conference.
Only until July 1st.
Oh, that's right.
and then they go to the Big East. And by the way, Dorian, what is happening to their other sports?
I am pretty sure that we're moving everything into the Big East except for hockey.
And
football is going to be independent. That is correct.
That's going to be a tough sledding for the football team.
I'll tell you, UConn's an interesting. It's really an interesting place right now, and what's happening there with all that heritage they have in so many of their sports, and they're just trying
to, like football.
Except for football, and that's the
sorry, Dorian. I couldn't help it as a Syracuse guy.
That's one of the problems. I mean, they've won more national championships than KU, NCAA championships, and the women's program is second to none, obviously. And yet, they are really kind of struggling to find their place in the college sports universe.
By the way, just as a sidebar, do people at Connecticut, around the Connecticut program, do they hold president at UConn, I think it was the president or chancellor, someone of that kind of title, when BC left for the ACC and they trashed BC, and now BC has never, forgotten it, and they were the ones that barred Connecticut from being in the ACC. Do people bash that person who had all those comments to say about Boston College when they left for the ACC?
Yes, they, okay. they, that was a big thing. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Be careful. You might need to get to that league someday. Oh, that someday's today. Bad idea. Yeah. Just curious. All right. So the league that was formerly the home, or soon will be formerly the home of Connecticut.
The future former home.
Yeah. The future former home of Connecticut. Mike Oresco, the ACC commissioner, or excuse me, AAC commissioner, said his league is prepared to play without some schools.
I think that if you're ready to go and you have health and safety protocols in place that you think are going to work, it's probably better to get started on time because, you know, who knows what's going to happen later on. But there is some flexibility in the schedule. In addition, there are some bye weeks and things of that nature. And it may be, Paul, that not everybody plays the same number of games. And, yes, we're planning for potential contingencies. Certainly, they said, well, what if nine of your schools can go, 10 can go, one can't? One is in a hot spot and just can't play. Our feeling, our ADs and our president's feeling was one school or two schools wouldn't want to hold the others back. We would be likely to play with 9 or 10. We haven't made final decision yet, but that's one of the issues that's going to come up.
So it does sound to me, listen, Bob Bowlesby's basically doing the banquet circuit these days.
He really is. Every day it's some new fresh quote from Bob.
It is, and I appreciate that. I appreciate him going out there and making himself available and you know, being there to answer questions, and I think that's a very good move for the Big 12 that, he's out there giving people information. I think it's a good thing. So when I say that, I say it championing what Bob Bowlesby's doing because he came by, he was on our show, and you can just watch. Okay, he was at Fox. Here's the Fox stuff. And, okay, he was at ESPN. Here's that. Here's the CBS ones. And, you know, they have all their stories. And he's largely saying the same thing, and he's saying it's going to be a bumpy road. And that seems to be what Oresco's saying here, that, listen, any idea, like people have quickly realized, and I thought the best way I've heard it put was Bob Bowlesby when he said, we've got to learn to coexist with the disease.
Yeah.
Or with the virus.
With the virus, right. Oh, and you know, he's, you know, I think of the Big 12 and the Big 12, where the schools are located in the states they're located in. And Big 12 might end up, may not have as big a problem or issues, or the road may not be as bumpy as the AAC or the ACC when, you know, just look at the ACC where you've got schools as remote as Virginia Tech and Blacksburg and even Clemson, you know, rural areas. And you also have schools in Boston and Pittsburgh and in Miami. And you look at the AAC, Temple in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is one of the hardest hit places in the country with this. And when Mike Oresco is saying, yeah, look, we might have to start the season without, you know, some teams or that's who he's thinking about, you know, the Temple. And Temple's in the same conference as Tulsa, and it's just not as bad as Tulsa in Tulsa. So that's kind of what we're looking at with colleges, and it's the way we always talk about the college sports landscape. Well, it's really getting defined right now what the college sports landscape is, and in places in this part of the country, you know, the chancellors, the presidents, the coaches were all sort of gung-ho about, yeah, we can – you know, we can start back on time. It's not going to be a big problem. You know, most of them. Not, there's some exceptions like Lincoln Riley, but in the East and on the West Coast, also in the Pac-12, it's a different tune there. And I was talking to somebody who covers TCU today. You know, TCU opens their football season against Cal at California. You know, California's, you know, they've got a different outlook on this than other people do. And you know, it just may not, you know, that. If you could play in an empty stadium in Cal, if that game's even being going to be played at all, and that wouldn't be the case if that game was at TCU. So it's just different depending on what part of the country you're in. I think it shapes your perspective on it. And again, if we were having this discussion on a show in, and I know you do this, you talk to guys from all over the country on the 2-minute drill, but it just looks different in Philadelphia or, you know, in New York than it does in Kansas City or Dallas.
The thing that amazes me is that it seems like every athletic director has a different plan for how much capacity it's going to hold.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is where I think we are seeing, and it's going to bring me to, and we'll get to this on the other side, but I'll just ask you, we're seeing a lack of leadership out of the NCAA. And that's not to say that they don't want to lead. They don't anymore. They can't. The schools don't listen to them. And it's, you know, we can go back to the Kansas, the discussion about, you know, why they're digging in so hard against Kansas, why they're responding so personally in their responses to Kansas, is because I do think the NCAA sees this as their last stand. But I think it's clear when the Iowa State AD saying, what, 50%?
Yeah.
And the Ohio State AD saying a sixth of capacity. And Arkansas is saying, everybody, come on, we're packing the house. That there is no leadership from the NCAA whatsoever, is there?
No, but there is no, we know this, there's no commissioner of college football and or college basketball for that matter. And that's just the way, that's the role that the NCAA chooses to play. It is, you know, the power in college football and therefore the power in college sports lies with the commissioners of the Power Five conferences. And, you know, they're, because they control the money. They're the biggest revenue source for major college sports is the regular season football contracts and the bowl contracts for the Power Five conferences. And so, you know, I've always thought, and hell, we've talked about this. I mean, is it time for those 64, 65, counting Notre Dame, schools to break away and to form their own, you know, their own coalition of confederation of conferences? I think that idea is going to gain momentum and steam over the next, I don't know, this season, the school year, the 2021 school year, just because in times like this, you know, the strong, you know, have a better chance of survival than the programs that don't have the access to the revenue that the other schools do. So the long way of saying, no, there is no centralized power when it comes to college football, because the NCAA has been created that way. That Pac-12 commissioner, you handle that, that situation, and SEC, you handle that, and I think it's also true. We know this, that the SEC looks at the world differently than everybody else. You know, it just means more, right, in that part of the world than it does anywhere else. So we're told constantly, and
don't you think it? I mean, well, I don't.
It, well, no, no, it, it obviously does. I mean, that's why you have athletic directors saying the things. You know, the Arkansas AD or. That's why I was really pleasantly surprised that in the few days after the sports shut down, Ed Ogeron was the very first college football coach to come out and say, you know, wear a mask and wash your hands and do all the right things. And because, you know, the governor of Louisiana could say it, but when the national championship coach says it, then you listen.
That crosses party lines.
Yes, it does. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What little there is in that state.
And Nick Saban did it as well.
He did. And I think that's why Nick did it, because Ogeron did it first and Saban had to come back. And Saban did something just last week with masks. And,
but you know, he could have gone the other way and said, like, no one's going to tell an Alabama Crimson Tide to wear a mask.
That's right.
And he didn't. I mean, he got on board. Now, I will say this. They are having big problems in Tuscaloosa finding a mask to fit that mascot. It's not easy to get that trunk under a mask.
And we don't really know that Ogeron may have said, don't wear it. Did he say wear the mask? I'm going to say he said wear a mask.
That's it. That's it. Battery said, I like checkers better than chess. I'm not sure. One or the other. One or the other. We've narrowed it down. Our forensic team has gone through the tape. We've nailed that part down.
You get the guys that dissected the Zapruder tape are going over the Ogeron tape. We're not really sure what he said.
Let's see. Let's see. The head's back and to the left. That's enunciating a verb there.
Have to run the subtitles.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break and talk about the breakaway, how it would work. That's another thing I want to talk to Jim Sterk about coming up later on in the 5 o'clock hour. More with Blair Kirchhoff, brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Are you in the market for a vehicle? Listen, you want them to bring the vehicle to your house, they'll do it. Go to robertbrogdon.com right now.
The Program with Soren Petro.
He's a big hoss, about a 260-pounder.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. If not for yourself,
then those around who care like I do. All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Who hit the most career home runs without making an All-Star game?
Ooh.
The number is 299.
It's not 612 with Jim Tomei, huh? Mm-mm. Made an All-Star game, it turns out. Most career home runs, 299. Now that smells kind of like, is that, what's he down with the Braves? Is he coming up there? He used to be at the Orioles. The outfielder, Mark Kakis.
Nope. This guy spent, Mark Kakis.
Mark Kakis made an All-Star game last season or 2 years ago.
That's terrible. Shouldn't have.
This guy played, how many years did he play?
You know what I like is how when you ask these questions, you've got all this detailed information ready at your fingertips.
But, exactly.
He better have played a long time. And it,
he played 14 years, all for one team.
Oh, there we go.
Won a Rookie of the Year.
He played Baroa?
He played for one franchise under three different city names.
So he was
had to be a Brave.
He was a Boston.
Mm-hmm. Brave?
He was a Boston, Milwaukee, Atlanta Brave.
Nope, played 92 to 06.
No, that's three towns, same franchise.
What about an Angel? California, L.A., Anaheim.
Is that what it is? Chili Davis?
Nope.
299 Angels.
Nobody played their entire career for the Angels.
92 to 06.
Everybody came from
Garrett Anderson?
Right? Nope. He was on that. Nope.
Tim Salmon?
Tim Salmon.
Nailed it. I'm out. Wow.
Tim Salmon, 299.
Whatever. Nailed it, my ass.
That's such a bad question.
We took away every other possible answer. That question sucks.
Tim Salmon might be the nicest person I've ever met in baseball, at least from an opposing team.
In baseball. That's quite a qualifier.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guys, but he might be the nicest guy. I missed him to interview him before a game when the Angels were in town. I was like, "Hey, yeah, come back at so and so," and I come back. He wasn't there. I looked around.
Wait a minute.
I come walking out.
Hang on. You were asked to do something at a certain time and it didn't get done.
No, the manager at that time, which I think was probably Buddy Bell, went a little late, and so I didn't get a chance to get back into the clubhouse before that time.
Wait a minute. And in addition to not showing up, you had some BS excuse as well.
Exactly.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
What else would it be? It's not going to be legit.
By the way, did you hear that pump fake right there, Blair? He was going to fire back. He's like, "Oh, screw it."
Nah.
Just bailed on it.
We just have fun here. He came out in the little runway there. He said, "Oh man, I went back in and was looking for you." He actually went onto the field to try to find me.
Wow.
When I wasn't there, I was like, "You got to be kidding me. Are you sure you're a major league baseball player?"
He actually lost a bet.
We did like 9 minutes, and then when I got done, he wanted to tell me stories about the commercial where he gives Tim Salmon had like his agent, Salmon's agent. So there was an ESPN commercial that he had done like his rookie year. He wanted to tell me the backstory behind. I was like, "Cool, dude. I'm just standing there talking." And he's like, "Well, all right. I guess I better get back inside." Excellent. Shook my hand. I was like, "You gotta be kidding me!"
Wow.
What were 92? Was his rookie year?
He
was
93.
So he played on the end of the plane. He was on the World Series team in 02.
Yep.
He was the guy that kind of hit the ground running too. He had the obviously won Rookie of the Year. Kind of stupid there, but everyone wasn't expecting him to be that good that fast, and then he was just exactly that good forever.
Came up in 92, hit 177 his first year. Okay, let's see.
And he won the Rookie of the Year.
No, his first, he came up at the end of 92, hit 177, and then came out and hit 31 and 95 in 93 and won the Rookie of the Year.
Slim pickings that year when 177 gets
you. Jeez. Fine, guy's name's a fish. Let's go. Give it to him.
Might as well. He's really nice. He went looking for some reporter.
Yeah.
On the field.
I swear, like, he lost some bet. They're like, "Now you got to go find that dumbass who was in here wanting to talk to you."
Let's see. Who else was in that? Who did he beat out? He beat out Jason Bure.
Well, good. Right-hander.
Five.
Yeah, for the
White Sox.
Indians, right?
White Sox. He later played for the Indians, though.
Yeah,
Jason Bure, 12. Beat out Aaron Seeley for the Red Sox. Wayne Kirby. It wasn't much. When Wayne Kirby is your fourth place, everyone goes, "Who?"
What are you talking about? Angel Barroa and Bob Hamlin won the award.
Yes, exactly.
For this franchise.
Exactly. Meanwhile, in the National League, you got Mike Piazza at 35-112, you know, slugging 560. Yeah, a little more notable.
And he shared the award with who? Blair Kirchhoff is with us, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. We're playing for Joe's Kansas City Barbecue right there. You know the Kansas City Barbecue store, Joe's wonderful creation. Right across the parking lot from Joe's at 119th and Strangline has got everything you need to grill at home. If you're cooking at home a lot more, get that grill going, get the smoker going. The grills, the smokers, the fuel, the pellets, the charcoal, the utensils, the sauces, the rubs, and even the meat is available at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Go to thekansascitybbqstore.com. Wonderful, wonderful store where I got my grill and my utensils, and I get sauces and I get rubs. It is fantastic, the Kansas City Barbecue Store. See them at 119th and Strangline Road. Blair is here, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Blair, tell me, Power 5 breaking away. You know, Dennis Todd wrote a piece on it, and it does seem more and more like maybe we're headed towards, you know, just regionalizing the non-revenue sports. Like, is there a reason why Kansas can't play Pitt State in golf? You know, they've got to go down to Austin to play golf. Like, in the non-revenue sports, couldn't we just regionalize that a lot easier, make everything a bus trip? And then just like you've always said, a football, you know, coalition with a commissioner, a basketball coalition with a commissioner, and let those two sports go play by themselves.
It does. It's starting to make more sense to me. And, you know, just think about let's take Kansas City, but you can take Lawrence or Columbia and draw a 250-mile radius around either of those college teams, and you'd get plenty of Division I programs that aren't in the conference that Missouri, Kansas, or Kansas State is in. Not including an Iowa State, but, you know, Tulsa, Wichita State, Drake, Creighton, Missouri State. There are plenty of schools that you could look, schools do schedule. Kansas State, they schedule a lot of these schools in non-conference and non-revenue sports, but then they do. Then the baseball team or the volleyball team or whatever, they hop on a plane and go to Texas or go to the coast for a tournament or something like that. And I tell you what, I like that as an alternative better than what we're seeing some schools do, and that's dropping the sports, right? We just saw Appalachian State drop men's soccer, a program that when I was at school there, that was a big deal, and they were an NCAA tournament team, and they had great tradition in that sport at that school, and that's gone. And the two other sports, Furman, Eastern Michigan, just like every week, Cincinnati, right? And somebody dropped baseball just recently, and every week we're hearing about a non-Power 5 school, just dropping the sport, and multiple sports. It's usually not one. They're taking this moment in time to get rid of three, four sports. And you absolutely hate to see that, hate to see opportunities leave. These are scholarships. We're talking about, if you take three sports, non-revenue sports at a group of five, not a Power 5, but a group of five, you're probably talking 20 to 25 scholarships. You know, some of them are equivalency, scholarships, but 20 to 25 full scholarships that, those are opportunities that no longer exist at some of these schools. And, but that's the, in some cases, the financial reality. That's how important losing the NCAA tournament was this year, because some of these conferences, that's their biggest payday is the money they receive from the units, right, that they get from the NCAA tournament, and they don't have that money this coming in the next year.
Will we see those sports brought back like in a couple of years? Is like, all right, we got no money right now, we got to shut it down, but in 2 or 3 years we'll see those sports back at those schools? Well, is it just a furloughing, or do you think that they're done? They're just getting out of the business of those non-revenue sports.
I tell you what, that's a good question. Or is it an opportunity to recreate your athletic department and maybe offer sports that you didn't have room for or didn't, you couldn't afford, but maybe make more sense? Soccer is to me an example of a sport that, certainly has a coast-to-coast popularity, and it grows every year. And I've heard of schools not being able to add it, because they're just, you know, they're full. They're maxed out on the number of sports that they can offer. And so maybe it's an opportunity for colleges to recreate their athletics, their sports menu. And something else, and look, you and I don't spend a minute talking about it, and we don't because maybe you know something about it, but I don't. But, you know, esports, you know, schools are gung-ho about esports. It doesn't cost them much of anything, and there's very little, you know, expense to it. But, gosh, every month or so I'm reading about how a college is creating or sponsoring an esports team. And so, again, maybe in – We're at the beginning of a college sports world that just looks different than what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, maybe we are. Let me ask you, and I think this would be true. You know, Dorian, our intern at Connecticut, they're trying to have Division I football and play it at Appalachian State. They've come up and are certainly doing very well. Eli Drinkwitz leaving Appalachian State. They've graduated out two coaches because of the success that the program has had over the last couple of years. But are they making money on football, or are they just getting a lot of donations and plowing it in? Because, you know, to me, and again, I'll ask this to Jim Sterk next hour. You know, Georgia and their $100 million rainy day fund seems to me like it ought to be almost like, if you were the NCAA, like, I would almost say that, hey, one of the things you got to do as a governing body, if you really had power, is everybody's got to have 1 year's budget in the bank.
Yeah. I think a lot of businesses are thinking that as well.
It's pathetic.
Right?
How our major corporations that they're 2 weeks away from the government has to bail them out.
Right. I mean, you think airlines?
We basically have government owned businesses.
Yeah,
sounds kind of socialistic to me, but you know.
Yes, it
anyway.
Is. Yeah, and I was going to say, do you think airlines should maybe think that way a little bit? nobody flying these days, but who knows what it's going to look like, who knows what it's going to be like, but football, you know, you're asking if those schools that have dropped sports, you know, the schools that have been dropping sports have football programs, right? And a school like App State is probably envied by a lot of Group of Five because they fill up a 30,000 seat stadium, but they're not, you know, they're in the Sun Belt and not the SEC or the ACC.
Right.
They don't have access to.
Yeah, we hear Cincinnati dropping sports. We haven't heard Alabama's dropping sports.
No, you're not, and you're not going to. I don't think you're going to. I mean, we've been through that around here with some sports. Kansas has dropped sports. It was 20 years ago, but they have dropped sports. Missouri dropped tennis, I think, years ago. But no, it's not going to happen. Not as long as they're plugged into that revenue.
It's not going to happen until they don't have anyone to play. And by that, I mean, it'll start on the lower end schools, right? The lower budget, the lower endowment schools in the Power Five. And if they start dropping sports and then you don't have anyone to play, I mean, we have seen baseball dropped. Baseball has been dropped by power schools.
Yeah. Yeah.
Iowa doesn't have a baseball program anymore. Mike Boddicker played at Iowa. They don't have baseball anymore.
But these in Iowa State doesn't, and Colorado doesn't, but those things happened before the money got what it is now. I mean, where before the TV contracts went from millions to billions of dollars. And that's a good question. I wonder how many, let's just say baseball, because there's, you know, we're talking about, I think it's 11, it's between 11 and 12 scholarships per program because it's an equivalency sport program, but rosters of 35. So there's a lot of opportunities there. I wonder how many Power Five programs have dropped baseball, say in the last 10 to 15 years, when the money has just gotten, you know, since in the era of conference networks, right? SEC network, Big 12, Big 10 network, Pac-12 network. And the money that flows from that, I wonder how many schools have dropped any sport, not just baseball, but any sport. I bet it's not many at all.
The thing that frustrates me is all the money that they generate in football, they spend it all. The football program, you know, yes, Alabama's donation rate isn't that high, but when we talk about Kansas having $25 or $30 million worth of donations, you know, to get to their $100 million budget. Like, okay, and football made 45. You know, that's not covering the whole 100.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you're having to go out and get the donations, you know, whatever the numbers are. I'm in the ballpark on those numbers, but not very close, I'm sure. So don't hold me to those numbers. But just as Alabama does, like the mega programs, they do literally fund the other programs. And they don't go out and ask for donations. The other schools, like, how long can Kansas donors keep giving money to keep up with Oklahoma football?
That's a good question. And keep in mind that, and I don't have it in front of me, but I would suspect, you know, a school offers as many sports as they can schedule, right? You're not going to have a sport where nobody else in your part of the country is playing that sport. So, you know, Missouri wrestles. I don't know who else in the SEC wrestles. That's why they're in the Mid-American Conference for wrestling. So they find schools that in Big 12 wrestling, you've got schools that in the Dakotas and Denver that are like what do they call them, associate members or something of the Big 12 wrestling tournament is actually 10 schools, but only 4 of them are the Big 12 schools that we understand. I think Air Force is in it, and that's sort of a way for, you know, it's the type of thinking that I think we should see more of in other sports, you know, just sort of regional scheduling and regional conference membership. So, I don't know, Saran. I think it kind of all goes back. I think this is just going to look different. And the smart people in college sports are going to be the ones that reshape what this looks like.
I want the MIAA to have their tournament in Kansas City and be what it is as an athletic, league.
It's a great Division II conference.
Yeah, they benefit from the NCAA tournament, right? And so I want the NCAA tournament to continue to benefit the MIAA. But I also couldn't look North Carolina straight in the face and say, yes, a portion of the revenues that you and the schools like you drive should be given to schools that never, ever, ever, ever have anything to do with the tournament that generates that money.
Yeah, yeah. And that's I understand that argument.
I mean, that's the Power 5 argument. The Power 5 argument is, and that's what they got in football, we're keeping all the revenue. Now, I think if they would bond together and have a commissioner and sell their rights as a collective, they could even make even more than being chopped up as these little conference rights.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, that being said, the argument is like, listen, these schools aren't playing in this tournament.
Well, and they also know, the Power 5 schools also know that, you know, the guarantees that they pay non-conference opponents, you know, really, really are lifeblood. That's money that absolutely has to, you know, that the Tulsas of the world has to have. Missouri State has to have their one or two guarantee games against Oklahoma State and Missouri. And, you know, and Tulsa has to play Oklahoma and/or Oklahoma State in a year to get that. That is, you know, that is their I don't know if it's their largest revenue source, but it is a large revenue source for them. We're talking about, you know, anywhere from $250,000 to $750,000 for a guarantee to play those games. Those games are important. So if there is some sort of, you know, Power Five breakaway, you know, to what extent are Group of Five, you know, not Division Two, but the Group of Five, the American Conference, the Sun Belt, the Mountain West, to what extent are they involved? And does it really become, do we really start to see the separation between the haves and the have-nots in college sports?
Well, and I think also I read a thing about the MAC, that MAC schools are dropping sports all over the place. And one of their problems is a lot of their revenue comes from student fees.
Yes, student fees is another. What happens? And, what happens in the world of student fees when schools go to online? You know, and tuition drop. You know, you have to have to adjust tuition for online learning because you're not, you know, you don't have the campus experience anymore. So that has an impact on a sports.
Well, we're seeing it. The MAC is cutting programs everywhere.
Yep.
That's exactly what's happening. And not only just not online, you know, online and not being able to charge those fees, but kids not going to school.
Right. Staying home, doing it. Yeah. You know, doing their 15 hours from the living room and not in a dormitory.
We will take a break. Blair Kirkhoff is with us. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. They're at I-35 in Santa Fe. The number one Buick dealer in the country is Robert Brogdon Buick GMC.
The Program with Soren Petro.
He's really good. And I don't know if you know this, he's kind of a colorful fellow that also creates some interest that makes it fun.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I wrap things up here with Blair Kirkhoff. Blair, all that being said, just real quick here, do you think that they break away in the next, like, 5 years?
Yes. I don't know if I ever would have said that. But because of the situation that we're in today, I think it'll eventually happen. I just do. I think the weak get weaker in these types of circumstances. I'm not saying the strong get stronger, but the weak get weaker. And we're seeing that right now with the dropping of sports and just revenue challenges for these schools that don't have, you know, ESPN and Fox funding their athletic departments.
Yeah, no doubt. Blair, always great talking to you, buddy. We appreciate it. We will talk with you again next week, my
friend. Sounds
good. Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star, College Insider. We will take a break. We come back. We will give you the things you need to know, and then Jim Sterk joining us a little bit later on in the 5 o'clock hour. It's all coming up next here in the program.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, how many active head coaches have taken a school to 3 straight Final Fours? Brought to you by Good Sense.